Welcome to the podcast of the First Presbyterian Church of Englewood, a community committed to live boldly, share boundlessly, grow community, and build God's world. Please visit us in person or at englewoodpres.org.
Our second lesson today is taken from the Gospel according to Luke chapter 14, verses 25 through 33. Now large crowds were traveling with him, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king going out to wage war against another king will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000? If he cannot, then while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions." This is the word of the Lord. Well, one of the things you hear people described as pretty often is a committed Christian. You'll hear people say, "Oh, so-and-so, you know, what a person, he was a committed Christian, she was a committed Christian." And I wonder what that means to you. What comes into your mind when you hear someone described as a committed Christian? Does this mean that they went to church every week? Does this mean that they, you know, gave a lot of money? Hopefully it would have something to do with the way they lived their lives. That somehow in the course of watching the person live out their everyday life, somehow they simply exuded the values of a Christ follower in doing so. People have different ways of expressing their commitment to Christ. I'm sure that some of you have seen this bumper sticker on someone's car. Have you ever see this? "Honk if you love Jesus." I've seen this sticker. Now, there is a person who developed a bumper sticker in response to this. It was admittedly not a big seller, although I believe our stewardship committee is going to order a case of them. And this bumper sticker went like this: "Tithe if you love Jesus, anyone can honk." Okay, I love that bumper sticker, okay? Because now we are talking about commitment. Now we are asking the question of whether people are actually willing to follow Christ with a full measure of devotion. And that's what this passage is about. Jesus is talking to us about this point of cost and whether you have enough to complete the mission that you're being called to as a follower of Christ. Are you willing to go all the way? And then he says this to a large crowd. The setting for this passage is that there is a large crowd that's following him. And rather than turn around to this large crowd and talk about how wonderful it is that they're there, he turns around and he delivers this teaching that basically says, and you know, most of you who are here don't have what it takes to go the rest of the way with me. He discourages the crowd that's following him and tries to winnow them down to the ones who are able to complete the task of following him. And then he says, basically, if you are only willing to go halfway, it's not good enough. If you're not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him. Now, I don't think that happens in most of our lives, but we do see it once in a while. Whenever we see the person who claims to be a Christ follower and then acts in a way that isn't consistent with that, and often because it got hard, it became easier to take the easy way out and not do what Christ asked, they do get subject to ridicule. Often it's private ridicule, maybe in the recesses of our hearts, which isn't the best attitude for us to have as Christians, but it shows up anyway. Sometimes it happens in the public sphere when you see someone who claims to be a follower of Christ and then for whatever reason they compromised on their integrity, compromised on their morals, and they subjected themselves to ridicule because they weren't able to finish. See, somewhere along the way, this call to follow Christ and to do it with a full measure of devotion is going to require you to make choices. And these choices are hard. And Jesus talks to us about these choices by using language that is particularly difficult when he says, whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters. And I think the first thing you do is you look at that passage and say, oh, wait a second. When are we ever supposed to hate someone as Christians? How is it that this word hate came into this lesson? The answer is that this is really more of a translation from a Semitic context of the use of hate to simply express a preferential choice. And we do it all the time. The example that I give is if we went to some place for ice cream and you said, would you like vanilla or chocolate? I'm likely to say, I hate chocolate. If all you offered me is chocolate ice cream, I will, however, eat it. All right. So it's not hatred in that sense of, oh my gosh, this is going to nauseate me. Rather, it's simply saying that I have a strong preference toward the one over the other, and they would express that preference by saying that they hate the other. So Jesus is simply saying that when push comes to shove, and especially this was going to happen in the life of an early follower of Christ. I mean, these are persons where there isn't this multi-generational history of following Christ that exists in so many of our families. These are persons who have to abandon the faith of their families in order to follow Christ because it's a brand new thing. And so he's basically telling them, understand that this is a choice you're going to have to make. Understand that as you choose to follow me and you choose to follow me all the way, it is going to set you at odds with some things and some people in your life whom you hold very dear. And if you're going to go all the way, you're going to have to make this choice. And so he uses this very hard language of saying, you may have to hate even your family. You may have to choose your faith over your family if this is what it comes down to. And he says that this is, and he puts this in a context that we tend to look at too materially because of the way it got translated in the NRSV. See, at the end of this passage, it says, you can't become my disciple if you not give up all your possessions. And that's kind of an unfortunate translation in the NRSV because what's in the Greek is simply the phrase, all he has. You can't become my disciple unless you are willing to give up all you have. And what we know is that all you have is a lot more than the stuff you own. And with a lot of people that we work with, a lot of people we talk to, if we sit there and say, hey, can you come and do this for a day, do this for a couple of days in the service of Christ? The answer we're likely to get back from a fair number of people is, no, but can I write you a check? Much easier for them to give up their possessions than to give up things like time, convenience, things like that. So all he has, all you have, actually encompasses so much more than just your stuff. But giving it up is to what end? And that's the point. It's not giving it up for the purpose of simply proving to Jesus that you're willing to follow him as far as he wants you to. Rather, we have to go back and look at this language that's being used here in the passage. This language of cost. I mean, when somebody says, here is something, it is beautiful, it is wonderful, and it is expensive. It costs a lot. All right? We're not saying that you are throwing your money down the drain if you put your money into purchasing that thing. All right? And yet so often when we talk about the cost of following Jesus, when we talk about the cost of discipleship, you know, which was that famous book written by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, when we talk about the cost of faith, we take that word cost and we make it sound as if it's a loss. We make the word cost sound as if we are taking it and throwing it down the drain. But the thing I want to point out to you, cost is not loss. Cost is an exchange. When something costs something, it is a price tag. It is something we are spending in order to get something of value. It is not loss. The cost of following Christ is not taking your life and throwing it down the drain for the sake of Christ. The cost of following Christ is the price tag for getting what a life of following Christ gets. Which is value not just eternally, but value in this life as well. Okay. So you can sit there and you can ask someone, how did you spend your day? Well, there's that economic language coming back in, right? How did you spend your day? Which is just like asking, how did you spend the $20 that I gave you? How did you spend it? And if you were to do something like answer the call to teach in church school, and someone were to say, well, how did you spend your morning? It's a waste. All I did was help a dozen kids learn about Jesus. It's not like I did something valuable with it. Right? That's not what you'd say. That's rewarding. That's meaningful. That's what makes your life worth living. It's so much better than saying, how did you spend your night? Well, I popped some popcorn in the microwave and watched Netflix for a couple of hours. And are you better off for it? Are you a better person for it? Have you added meaning to your life by doing that? Sure, sometimes those things are great. In fact, that sounds like my night tonight. Although it's actually more like popcorn and Notre Dame football tonight. But still, you need to sit there and look at the totality of your life and say, how am I spending my life? And am I spending it by putting it towards something where the cost is in fact high? But what I'm buying is worth it. What I'm buying with that cost for that price is a life of meaning, a life of purpose, a life that makes the world better, a life that changes eternity for people who come to know the gospel. It's not loss. It's an exchange. It's being able to get to the end of your days and say, what did I do with the time, the stuff, the skills that I was given? Did I spend it on the things that were good? Did I spend it on the things that were meaningful? Did I spend it on the things that will outlive me and outlast me into future generations? That's what matters. It's not loss. It's the use of what we've been given to invest in a vision for the future that is what God intends for us and what God hopes we will leave for future generations who will come to know Him, come to love Him, and just as importantly, come to know that God loves them. Amen.